Hey guys, it's Wes Gardner from Brothering Around, and this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Audible. Our good friends at Amazon have an awesome audiobook company. You got to check it out. It's audible.com. We actually have a free trial set up through them at audibletrial.com/brotheringaround. Go there, get yourself a free audiobook on the house. You don't have to sign a contract. You don't got to do none of that stuff. Just go get yourself a free audiobook at audibletrial.com/brotheringaround. And then you can also choose between 180,000 other titles. If you got something that can listen to Brothering Around, you got something that can take full advantage of everything Audible can bring you. So go to audibletrial.com/brotheringaround. Get yourself a free book on the house from your boys here at Brothering Around. Oh, it has been a day or two.
Dude, it's been a good bit. It's been a good bit. Things have happened. We had a time skip.
That's true. Tides have turned. The moon has risen. Apparently, Dragon Ball Z is the new hotness again.
It is the new hotness. Damn right, it is the new hotness.
Holy shit.
We'll talk about that later.
Yes, we will. but yeah, welcome to episode something 30.
I think we're on 30. I think we're on 30 now.
Is this big 3-0?
Big 3-0.
Wow.
The big O.
The big. They need to make a big O game. Is what they need to do. Shit, man. So yeah, I'm Wes Gardner, Mr. Combi the Hobo, and over there. We got Mr. Marco Flores, Nerd in the Bay, coming off being slightly under the weather.
Oh, dude. The T-Virus got me, man. In the middle of my wedding anniversary and my birthday happening, E3 happening, and now, see, it's starting. I'm about to have an eyeball popping out of my shoulder. Coming up, because after this recording, we're going to take another week off I'm going to be down. Me and the wife are going to go down to L.A. because this is her basically her birthday surprise for me. Yeah. That she's going to take me to L.A. And then, you know, we're going to do Disneyland, California, and then Universal Studios.
Yeah.
So just enjoy and be kids.
Absolutely, down there, man. You know? That'll be a freaking blast.
That's happening next week. Heck, so like all these things are happening, and then like, man, I can't enjoy any of it. Like I was enjoying wedding anniversary, and I think I got sick by the time E3 was happening.
Yeah,
which was right around my birthday week. So yeah, I couldn't enjoy it fully because I was like coughing up a storm. And my nose has been running ever since. And people at work is like, oh, you should get some rest. I was like, dude, I need to get paid.
I need some money for the
trip. So. I can't really do what you want me to do. So I need to just deal, get these days over with. And then I'm out of you guys' hair for like a few days.
There you go. Yep.
I mean, other than me, things are happening, birthday, getting older, wedding anniversary. You are a married man now.
That's true. Absolutely. Yeah. We got a video of the honeymoon up on the things, man. Yeah. Got that video of the honeymoon up on the YouTube channel. So if you want to chill out with us in Seattle, which is freaking amazing, that city is so cool. I mean, we're here in Texas, and people talk about, have you gone to Austin, Texas? Yeah, and it fucking sucks. Like, Austin doesn't hold a candle, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I would actually say one of the coolest cities in Texas is Fort Worth. Like, you can find a lot of cool stuff to do in Fort Worth, Texas. But, I haven't been down the San Antonio way, like the true south of Texas. But I heard there's a lot of cool stuff there, cool culture. Dallas is what it is. I mean, it's just a big, big monolith city. It's huge.
Big old city.
Yeah, it's just there's too many people and the traffic's terrible. And I mean, everything you know and love about a giant city is Dallas. But Fort Worth actually has a little bit of culture. It's a little more like hipstery type stuff, but I mean, Seattle was outrageous.
Yeah. So you guys went to a few restaurants. I mean, I was trying to gather recommendations for you guys because
yes,
my wife's like best friends used to live there for like a year.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they were trying to recommend you guys some stuff, but you guys were at the fish market location.
Yeah. We're literally, we walked downstairs and we're in the market.
Down the hill. Did you catch a fish?
No. Thing was, it was super like that area is always super busy. But what was interesting is, you know, there's all these people videotaping and all this stuff because the fish market guys, they're just screaming their head off. You know, they're taking orders and all that stuff. They're flinging fish across the aisles and stuff. So the first day we get there, you know, the plane lands, our freaking concierge like delivers us to our hotel, like in this big black tinted window SUV. So we already look like, you know, rock stars coming in here.
Yeah.
And then, so we get there and, you know, see our room and it's ridiculous. And we just go outside and we're like, okay, we gotta know like what's this like, let's walk around, get our bearings a little bit. And then, so that first day we're like, oh, look at the fish guys. That's crazy. And all this, by like the third day, we seemed like seasoned veterans down there. Cause we knew exactly the places to go eat. We had like our favorite little bagel shop. Like we had all these things. Spots, we kind of had our spots. We knew to cross the street a little early before the lights tell us we can. Like,
all right,
you start like adapting to the surroundings a little bit. And even I think it was the first, maybe second day, we actually had two guys like come up and like, hey, can you take our picture next to this thing? And I was like, sure. So, you know, I take their picture and stuff, and it's like, my wife's like, oh, you guys found us out because, you know, we're also tourists. And they came up and they're like, we actually thought you guys lived here. So I was like, I don't know if they're lying or if we really actually blended in. So
you blended in. That's awesome.
It's good times. Because you never want to look like the tourist. You never want to have that big sun hat with like the sun block on your nose.
Yeah.
And you're just looking around. You're just wearing like ducky floaties everywhere. Not even wearing near
the
water.
Wearing the visor hat with like sunscreen on your nose.
With the guy Fieri hair out, like, sticking out of it. Picture. Yeah. Hawaiian t-shirt.
You don't want to look like bait.
Yeah. Yes. And you're wearing like Crocs. Just the whole deal. And knee pads for whatever reason. You just look absurd.
Was there any places that you wanted to take a look at in the area you were at anywhere in Washington in that area?
Yeah, because I mean there were quite a few like retro game stores kind of out of the realm of like going there on a decent timetable and stuff, but we actually did, and this is another video on the channel, we actually walked about a mile and a half to Pink Gorilla Games. And it was in International District. So it was in Chinatown. And we got to hang out and we ate sushi down there. And it was freaking perfect sushi. Like, oh my God. And the city just smells so good. even by a harbor, you think, oh, it's going to smell like fish and all this stuff. It smelled like cinnamon apples. And then you walk another block and it's like, we made fresh cheese and here's samples of it. And then it's like, oh, I have a giant apple. And like, it was nuts. Like it felt not like a real place. It almost felt like a theme park. Cool. Like if you like to drink coffee and eat yummy food, here's your theme park is you just go downtown Seattle and walk around for a mile. Yeah. And then you get all sorts of stuff.
Did you have clam chowder in the fish market area?
Yes.
Yeah. What'd you think?
It was on the money, man. Like it was, it's a little stronger than like something you'd buy in a can.
Yeah,
but
I think it was the sourdough that does it. That makes it stronger. I feel like it is.
That's a good take because I think because everything's thicker. Also, because if you're used to the stuff in the can, you know, it's slightly thick and stuff, and it has a little dumpling type thing, and you know, whatever. Yeah. But whenever you get it straight from the source, and I mean, this was like super straight from the source because they would catch fish. And we would walk down alleys. There's one big alley called Post Alley. And what you would see is fishermen like delivering the fish to the restaurants. So they would just go catch it. Right. They would catch it, walk across the street, hand someone like a flopping fish and be like, here's your thing you ordered. Yeah. And then you get a fresh fish right there. And it was crazy. And we had I'm probably going to not pronounce it right, but I've always wanted to try that Canadian food. What is it? Poutine?
Where the
French fries, and then they get the cheese curds. And then
cheese curds and brown sauce.
Yeah, like gravy and stuff like that. Never had it before, but they had it on the menu, and I was like, you know what? Why not, man? And holy shit, it's good.
When me and the martial arts team I used to roll with, when we had a gathering that was in Vancouver, but we flew out to Seattle. Basically. Mm-hmm. And so basically driving up there, it was like a 3-hour drive. Cool. And Seattle has it there too. But like when we went up to Vancouver, like, I mean, that's where it came from, right?
Yes. Canada. Yeah.
So I'd rather would have it there, but I actually didn't have it yet. I tried it and it was, I would say, yeah, you definitely do need to try it. Let go of your diet for a day.
Oh God.
Give it a try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so thick and like, but it doesn't feel thick. The way they prepared it, the fries were really light and the gravy wasn't too overbearing. And like the cheese curds were perfect because I got it from the cheese place right across the street. You know what I mean? Right. So like all the stuff's super fresh. The fries are like that perfect crispy and they're really light. Mm. And then you're eating it and you're like, oh my God, this is so good. This is so good. And then, you know, they bring your actual dinner and then you're like, I'm actually way more full than I thought I was because I just had massive amounts of cheese and French fries with gravy on it. Like
see, I'm dying here.
Oh no, it's the T virus. It's him.
Oh dude.
Oh, but yeah, it's so good, and then it like sneaks up on you. You know, and it's also like, I guess clam chowder kind of does that same thing because you have this little bowl of chowder and you're like, you know what? I can probably polish this off. No problem. And then you eat it all. And you're like, yo, that's great. I'm time for my meal now. Time to bring out the meal. And then you get 4 bites into your meal and you're like, holy crap, that clam chowder.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, like, but it's the best. It's that best full you've ever had because you can't really, you're in kind of like the pre-food coma. Because you're like looking around and things are blurry and you're like, I can't, it feels so good, but I'm going to pass out.
So, so you got to preemptively decide how hungry you are and decide if you're going to get full off of the clam chowder or your main entree. I think the main people that make the mistake is they see like cup, they see like a cup, a regular cup, a bowl and a bread bowl, and think they can just go for the bread bowl and then get their main entree. Like, that's a rookie mistake right there.
Yes, it is. That's your amateur mistake.
You need
mistake.
To be really hungry because after you eat the soup at the clam chowder, then you have the bread that soaks in all the clam chowder that it's holding.
And it's so heavy bread.
Too, and it's heavy, exactly. It's heavy. So it's heavy whenever you guys do decide to come here, it's like San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah,
because this is where the home of clam chowder is, I believe.
Oh,
When you guys come around, you let us know, and then we'll take you to the places.
Yeah,
that you can experience, like, I guess what is called vintage
clam chowder. Like the Michael Cole vintage chowder. See, and that's the secret. That's the secret. Is you. And like if you and the wife would, you know, come to Texas anytime, we'll take you to an actual Texas steakhouse.
Please.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like you have where
I'll take you to like the McDonald's version of
hell no. There is no chain restaurant here. Hell no. This piece of beef is gonna cost you $24 just for the steak. You know what I'm saying? Like they basically you will Yeah, you'll just get the order in, and then you just, you know, the waitress could just go tell the waitress, you know, hey, how rare do you want it? We'll just go take its horns off and smack its ass and put it on a plate. Like Yeah, just I'll get that one.
What they said,
and like, so that's a secret. Just find someone you know or find someone you trust at the place you're going, and be like, okay, I know there's the touristy places, but where is the actual place to get food? Like, where do you go to eat?
Where do you guys go?
And yeah, it was great. I even got we didn't have it in the video, but there was a street vendor that did, it was called like Me Some Pastry. And it was this Hong Kong pastry place, but it had pork buns. They had barbecue pork buns. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. I immediately thought of I immediately thought of Sleeping Dogs. Because okay. Whenever it's like, you're a lazy man in your hand without a pork bun, or like whatever the guy says. And I was like, I need to get a pork bun. So
James Hahn over here.
Yeah. it's so good. And like, it was almost like they put the barbecue with like cinnamon in it or something. Like,
oh, yeah. Okay,
and it was like big sweetbread. You know, it's just this big like dinner roll. So you get that, and I mean, it's about the size of like a fruit, but maybe like a pineapple. Like, seriously, the thing's pretty big. And then I get it, and I'm like, okay, you know, I take a big bite out of it, and it's the sweet rolls, because it has like, they bake it with like honey and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my God. And then you get in with the actual barbecue, like pulled pork in it. And I was like, oh, this is, I could eat these forever. Just unbelievably good. And yeah, and then we had something that I hadn't had in a long time. Okay. And it was a little what are they called? They're the little red bean pastry things. Egg tart. Yeah, wife just said it was an egg tart, and it has like red bean paste in it. And I was like, you know, I want to try that, because they say it's sweet and that's a good dessert. Mm. And it was good, but I wasn't prepared for how thick that red bean paste was. Like,
okay,
I bit into it.
Texture threw you off?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. And like, the thing is, you bite into it and the outside's like room temperature, but then the red bean paste is really cold.
And you're
and you're like, what the?
That'll throw you off.
Yeah, I was like, what the? Because I just had, but the flavors were good. It was just so thick. Mm. Like, it was the type of thick that, if you have like a brick of chocolate and you're trying to like bite into a full thing of chocolate, that sort of like your teeth kind of dig into it, and then it makes your teeth marks and like that type of thing. But yeah, they packed it. They packed that thing crazy. But yeah, everything was just so good, and everyone's livelihood was based on the most bizarre, amazing things. Because it was like, oh, we went to the bagel place, and the guy's like, yeah, this is what I do. I just make bagels. And I was like, that's awesome.
All day.
Yeah. And then that's how he lives his life. And then we're like, hey, what about this cream cheese? And he's like, oh, it's my brother-in-law or something. And he's like, all he does
over there.
Yeah, all he does is make cream cheese all day. Yeah. Like, you can do that? Like, you can actually do that.
You can live off of making like your bagels and cream cheese.
But shit, man, it was like so good.
Two-bedroom apartment or something.
Yeah, yeah, he has like a studio suite in freaking downtown Seattle. It's like, what do you do? Oh, I make cream cheese. Oh.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, well done. But dude, it was that whole trip was baller.
That's awesome, man.
And yeah, and then we came back, and you know, not too long after, it was E3 time.
Oh yeah. And that's what I've been doing. I mean, I'm making up time. That's what I've been doing while I'm sick right now. I literally have not been training, I think, for like maybe a week and a half. Like, I feel it, because I'm eating at all these different places, you know, not worrying about my diet at the moment. But I was watching E3, literally not training. I was like, wow, all this time feels nice. But then again, the sucky part of, like, I guess losing weight is you get cold easily. Like,
yeah.
As I'm noticing.
Yep.
But So anyways, I was like, man, I don't know if I do I want to get more fat just so I can be vulnerable.
You just feel like a chihuahua in the rain.
Yeah. You're
like,
exactly. Like, dude, what's going on? Anyways, yeah, that's what I've been doing. I've been catching up on E3. I think I just mainly watched. Sony, Microsoft, EA, and then I'm making it up today. I think I finished Nintendo, and then I still have Ubisoft left.
Yeah.
So I already know what's
announced. Yeah. So overall, and sorry to cut you off, but I was wondering.
No, it's okay.
Overall, like, what are your thoughts on those conferences, or like, I guess E3 as a whole? Because I'm interested to hear kind of, because, you know, E3 time, you know, it's less. E3 can arguably be said it's less important than it's ever been, because now there's like Tokyo Game Show and PAX and CES and like all these other big gaming things, and Twitch is 24/7 video games and reveals and trailers and all that stuff. So E3 in and of itself isn't quite the big spectacle it used to be. But like overall, what did you think of the show kind of together? You know what I mean?
Yeah. As you say it, as I'm listening to it, that does make sense, because I did feel E3 as a whole was a bit tamer than like previous years. And I'm comparing all the conferences that I did watch, but like at the end of it, and I hear that, like, you know, there's always like a winner of those conferences. When I hear that the winner is Ubisoft,
yeah.
To me, like, especially because I'm, you know, Sony fanboy and all that stuff, worked for the company myself, so I'm looking forward to whatever Sony's doing. Watched their conference, like, okay, that's cool. God of War was pretty cool to watch. Spider-Man was great to look at, and I'm like, but is that kind of it?
Yeah.
Like I feel like I was expecting more. They showed a little bit of Marvel versus Capcom Infinite. I don't think it's at the response of Dragon Ball FighterZ, but like, I mean, you cannot like out showcase what they just showed.
Oh no way!
You know, the kind of the measly, in a sense, measly story trailer thing that they were having compared to what Dragon Ball FighterZ was showing.
Dragon Ball FighterZ was game of the show for me. Like,
I think so too.
My knowledge of Dragon Ball Z is only up to like the Cell Saga. Like that's as far as I got, and then I saw the Cell Saga, and I was like, "Yep, that sounds pretty good." Like I finished it. I was great. Yeah. I got my fill. I understood what the hype was about. I was like, "This show kicks ass. I don't need to watch another 37 seasons of this." But I saw the Cell Saga, and I'm in, man. Like that was great, and I'm done.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy that they made the Cell Saga its own DVD set, because then I just buy the one thing.
Go back to that.
Yeah. That's it. And then, you know, but seeing that trailer, I was like, holy shit, they are on another level.
Because it
looked perfect. That's one of those games that I saw and I was like, welp, you can pack it on up, because there is nobody that's going to outdo that one.
Yeah. So it's interesting in itself for me as like mainly a fighting game player. But it's made by the guys who made Guilty Gear.
Yeah.
And Guilty Gear is basically, they're known for, of course, they're known for Guilty Gear, of course, but like their art style, their artwork, how, you know, the characters like move in motion, it looks really, really beautiful, right? Hand-drawn animations and stuff like that looks really beautiful. So you transfer all that to Dragon Ball and you got me hooked, because I'm not so much of a Guilty Gear fan. Just, I think not vibing with the play style. Like I played it a little bit and like, okay, it's okay. I felt it was just okay for me.
But
you transfer that, maybe the same system, maybe you know, the nuances of the Guilty Gear system towards Dragon Ball, and you know, change it up and do new things, and then you got my attention, right? The art style looks beautiful. Little nuances that reference back to like the Dragon Ball like anime and manga, like some attacks, some things that are happening in the background, you know, of course the characters, what they're doing. It just, everything was like all a culmination of what we basically want to see in our dream Dragon Ball fighter. And it's 20% complete at the things that you saw of like the trailer, so, and the gameplay demos. That's literally just 20% done. I'm like, what does 100%, what does gold look like?
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, the amount of characters they're going to have and just all these different things that they're going to be doing. Like,
it's ridiculous. Like is a day one purchase for me. And I usually get I get the Dragon Ball games usually when they go on sale, because after, you know, nine and 10 months, they go for about half off or so. And I'm like, I think I got that first, what was it? The Xenoverse game. I think I got the first one for like $14. And, you know, it's like, I'm not the biggest Dragon Ball fan, but hey, let me make a guy. Let me go and fight Cell if he's in there. And like,
through the timeline stuff and play all the old, you know, battles. And
have a little blast. It's funny because I'm the same way about the Naruto games. Like, oh yeah, I saw maybe the first half of the first season of Naruto, and what I saw, I liked. And I was like, oh yeah, he's a ninja kid, and he went to school, and they taught him how to do stuff. That's neat.
Yeah,
and that was it. That was my whole idea of. But I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, I'm the guy that thinks Sonic the Hedgehog is the thing that collects coins. Like, yeah. that's all I know about. I'm like, oh, he's the guy, and Knuckles is his red friend who's an echidna. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Like, it stopped at Sega Genesis. Like, that whole the whole deal. I don't know really who Shadow is and what the hell is that human person doing here. But so, like, I got my fill of Naruto after about the first season. I was like, you know what? Okay. It gave me a story arc. He overcame adversity. Great. Mm-hmm. Him and his ninja buddies are doing good things. And yeah. But with Dragon Ball, yeah, I'm that same way. I do have, like, I think Master Roshi's awesome. You know, just that I get it. Like, I'm not as hardcore into it, but I get it. But yeah, the moment I saw that in footage, and I was like, okay, what is this? And then they kept going, and that trailer kept going, and I was like, what is this? I'm like, holy shit. And that was my only jaw drop moment of the whole conference, of the whole show this year was, and what does that say about E3? And this is not to knock the Dragon Ball game at all, but whenever your game of the show is a Dragon Ball fighting game, what does that say? Does that say that the industry's changing, or that these Guilty Gear guys know their shit and they got it down to the wire? Like, that is, they got lightning in a bottle, which maybe.
I think nobody was expecting that. True. That game.
That's a good
call. I think
call.
Nobody was expecting that game whatsoever. That's a good
call. Yeah.
You know, because people were looking, of course, for Sony. Like, again, they were looking forward to the God of War, seeing more God of War. Microsoft, anything maybe like what were they showcasing? Microsoft, I'm forgetting.
Microsoft, they showed. They brought out a new Porsche. They were like, here's Forza.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the new car.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, they showcase Forza. And, like, you come to expect, like, these repeated iterations of games. But, like, that Dragon Ball game in particular, because people were we could have been expecting, like, Xenoverse 3 or.
Yes, you know, that's Xenoverse, true. Yeah.
Updated version, because it's still going. Still going on, too. Just came out, like, not too long ago.
Yeah, like last year.
Yeah, so like nobody was expecting a 3-on-3 Marvel-like fighter.
Yeah.
You got to put that into perspective.
That's true.
Because they are tagging almost seamlessly, and you can throw your assist out there like at the same time. So it's Dragon Ball Marvel at that point, maybe more so than Marvel is at the moment.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was my game of the show. But going back to the conference generally, yeah, I just thought it was tame. I thought Microsoft seemed PS3 hungry when Sony with the PS3 was winning conferences, or quote unquote winning conferences.
Yeah.
Compared to what Xbox 360 Microsoft did in the few years this current generation, because Xbox seemed more hungrier. And they had a not too bad lineup in itself too. Trying to remember what it is off the top of my head, but Microsoft seemed like PS3 hungry, like it was before, and then Sony. I liked it. It was solid. I guess I was wanting more. Nintendo, not too bad. You know, two Metroids.
Yep.
And then Mario Odyssey showing the whole hat tech thing. And then, EA, you know, doing EA things. Ubisoft, I have yet to see, but the fact that I hear that they quote unquote, I guess general consensus that they quote unquote won, like I had to see what they were showing.
Yeah, they were solid. You know, I think whenever everyone saw that teaser picture of the Mario versus the Rabbids, I was like, oh god, here we go. But then they showed it off, and it was it's a freaking XCOM game.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that's like amazing. Yeah, it's like it's a Final Fantasy Tactics or Fire Emblem, but with Mario and the Rabbids. And I was like, oh man, that's a great idea. Yeah. I was like, that's awesome. And then the maps do weird things. Like you can go in a portal pipe and it takes you to the other side of the thing. So it's like a teleport. And I'm like, that's really, that's a genius idea. Whenever I saw it in motion, I was like, that is, I'm not going to buy a Switch, but that is awesome. Like that's sincerely a cool looking game. And then I don't know, like I love the first Metroid Prime and two was still pretty good. And three was like, oh, it was okay. But then, you know, people flipped out at the PowerPoint slide of Metroid Prime 4. And I was like, well, of course they're making a Metroid game. Like, that doesn't really, I mean, yeah, I'm excited about it. And then the 3DS one, they were like, oh, it's a 2D Metroid game. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. And they're like, brought to you by the same people that made that Castlevania game that no one really liked. I'm like, all right. Because I can't remember the name of the studio. But, yeah, they did a... Oh, what was it called? I'm going to pull up my Steam list real quick. It was like Castlevania. Oh, what is it? Castlevania Lords of Shadow.
Okay.
Mirror of Fate HD. I got it on Steam, just looked it up. But it was an okay game. But it's not a Castlevania game. Like,
okay.
It's not as in-depth. You know, so I think this 2.5D... 3DS Metroid game is probably going to be another Metroid Other M, which, you know, was fun to play apparently, but not, you know, people kind of made fun of it afterwards. They're like, this ain't the real jam. But yeah, I mean, you know, Nintendo's really going all in on the Switch. And then they did weird things during that little deal. One, it was only 20 minutes long. And then they were like, by the way, we're making a main Pokemon game for the Switch. Hope you're excited.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, what? You showed a PowerPoint slide for Metroid Prime 4, but you didn't show a render of Pikachu being like, oh, by the way, full on Pokemon Switch coming at you.
Yeah.
Just some guy in a room, like drawing on a napkin. It's like, oh, yeah, but there was a feather thing.
Yeah, we had this, and the guy's like out there in the background with his thumbs up, like, yep, working on it right now.
Yep, we're right back there. We're on lunch break.
I'm drawing on my napkin.
Yeah, we promise it's a real thing. Yeah, and it's not even one of those deals, because, you know, Marco, you and I have been around a little bit. Mm. We're young grizzled vets when it comes to gaming conferences and... Mm-hmm. You know, we covered them for a while, like back in the old early Nitro Beer days, like, oh shit, 9 years ago. Jesus Christ. So almost a decade ago, we're covering, you know, E3s and best of and writing up blog posts and all that stuff. It is what it is. Like, I don't even know what I would expect from it. And another weird thing. So two things kind of bugged me about Sony's deal. And I don't know if you feel the same way about this. This might give me a lot of hate mail, so please send in that hate mail to twitter.com/comedyhobo. So I love Shadow of the Colossus more than, you know, I think it's one of the defining games on the PS2. I love it dearly. Beautiful. The game made me cry. Like, genuinely, I have an emotional investment towards that game. So the rumor was about a month before E3, Sony rebought the trademark for Shadow of the Colossus. Like, they renewed the trademark. That's weird. Like, are they going to do like a prequel or something? Like, what are they doing this for? Why do they need to keep this alive? Or are they going to do that HD remaster, you know, the Eco Shadow of the Colossus HD thing they did for PS3?
Yeah.
Is it now going to be a PS4 release as well? And now they're going to do 4K for the PS4 Pro. That's what I was thinking. I was like, okay, they're going to use that thing that they already did and then just do it again and report it
again.
That's fine. And they kind of did, but kind of didn't. So now they're rebuilding all of Shadow of the Colossus to run on the PS4, which, hey, awesome. But you took your own wind out of your own sails because you already did this. Like... That's how I felt about it. I was like, I would be so stoked for this if the PS3 HD remaster never happened.
Didn't happen.
If it was just, you know what I'm saying? If it was just PS2 and then they didn't do anything about it for PS3 and then they jump back after Last Guardian and they're like, oh, you know that Last Guardian technology we have? By the way, boom. and they drop that bombshell, I would flip. That would be my game of the show. Easy.
Yeah.
But I already played the HD remaster. So what's this going to do that that didn't do already? And, you know, okay, I'm kind of...
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
I'm kind of a mark for that game. So it's like, I'll probably buy it when it's a half price at a Best Buy or something like that. I'll probably still pick it up just to have it. But a $60, you know, if you've never played it before, holy crap, buy that, like pre-order it right now. Like stop listening to this podcast and go on Amazon and pre-order that PS4 Shadow of the Colossus. If you've never played it before, it's it's a defining video game. Like it's one of those that people talk about games as art and all this other navel gazing hoity toity shit. That would be one of the ones I would pick. Like, yeah, beat this game and you will have an emotional experience.
Okay.
So highly recommend the game. It's just, since I've already beaten the game like 18 times, like 16 of them on PS2 and the other two on PS3, I don't know what my incentive would be to get this other one besides a prettier look and a better frame rate. But
yeah.
And then the other one that I want to kind of pick your brain about this. Because the moment I saw this, I was like, okay, I want to hear what Marco has to say about this. The moment I saw it in the conference. So that Spider-Man game. Something seems weird about it.
And what part? What seems weird?
The Spider-Man game.
Okay.
So something about that Spider-Man game. It feels like it's going to be just like Uncharted.
That's been the general consensus about what's been shown. Yeah.
Like the web swinging isn't really going to be the same as like the PS2 Spider-Man. It's going to be fairly on rails. You know, I don't think we're going to really be able to explore that massive city. I think this is a game of set pieces. And that might be a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, I know that what was it? Amazing Spider-Man, what, 2? No, not Amazing. Spider-Man 2 was the one with the amazing web swinging.
Yes. Oh, God, the game is so good. Yeah.
So that is basically the benchmark, because the guy that was in charge of those controls did that on his, you know, off the clock hours and not get paid for it.
Yeah.
So, like, he really cared about, you know, the web swinging in that game.
Right.
From what I'm seeing right now, I need to see if it's actually free roaming, right? Because as of right now, it's basically what you're saying, set pieces and slash, it's like half Uncharted, half, you know, whatever it is. But like, I'm digging the action. It kind of gets the vibe of what Spider-Man is because of like the whole spider senses, all these things are happening all around you.
Yeah.
And you're reacting to the very, very split, like, nanosecond to like, move out of the way, counter the attack, or like, you know, do something clever. That may be the trade-off. I would wish for both parts of that, you know, free roam web swinging with the incredible set pieces to be all combined together.
Yeah. Yeah.
It may be a trade-off, and with all the Spider-Man games that are out there after Spider-Man 2, nobody's able to replicate or outdo those Spider-Man web-swinging controls. So, if you can't even get close to that, I personally don't want to see them to actually try.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, if you can't at least hit that benchmark.
If you can't get nowhere near that level, then don't do yourself a service and don't try, you know, half-assing
to
do those types of controls.
Yeah.
If you have a formula that can outdo that, then definitely I would love to see that. But for this Spider-Man game, you know, Spider-Man 2 has the web-swinging controls down. I can look at that fondly and like, yeah, that was the pinnacle of like web swinging controls.
Yeah.
This is like, I'm understanding that this is what Spider-Man deals with, you know, on his daily basis, whatever he's going to be going through with this game. So like, I like what I'm seeing with Amazing Spider-Man. at the same time, I would love to have that web swinging controls from part two, but you know, we can't have everything that we want. So.
That's true.
I mean, I'll take it as it is.
Yeah, and it's one of those that the kind of nice thing is we've seen how bad Spider-Man games can be.
Exactly.
This won't be that bad. This will be firmly like in the middle and probably on the upper end of what Spider-Man games we've had before. So it's one of those that we're going to get a good game. I bet it's going to be fun and entertaining and beautiful to look at. But what I was really hoping for is essentially just another Infamous game. But instead of doing like electricity stuff, you were Spider-Man and you could web swing around.
And you're doing all that. Yeah.
I would be A-okay if it was literally a reskin of the same freaking Infamous city. I'm totally down for that. Like,
that would be cool.
You know, because those Infamous games are outstanding.
Oh, dude. Yeah. No, I love Infamous.
You know, and that's all I want. Like, that because, you know, and they showed, and this kind of correlates back to one of the, in my opinion, one of the highlights of the Microsoft conference was a Crackdown 3.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Terry Crews? Oh,
yeah, man. So, but a lot of people don't think that way. They're like, oh, well, you know, Crackdown 2 wasn't very good. But here's the thing. Okay. I loved Crackdown 1. I loved Crackdown 1 so much that I got all of the achievements or whatever for it, which is not easy to do on that game. It takes probably close to 70 or 80 hours. So got all the achievements. Then I want to say, my Xbox red ringed, right? Then it ate the game and all that stuff. So then whenever they gave me the refund and all that stuff, I went out and bought both of them again. And yeah, the achievements tied to my account, but I rebeat the game again and would have unlocked all the achievements again. Like, I played so much of that game. The only other 360 game I probably spent more time with was Chrome Hounds. And, and Chrome Hounds was, we could have a whole podcast about Chrome Hounds. That game was nuts. But with Crackdown, I'm like, if they make Crackdown 3 the same way they made Crackdown 1, to where just let me go to little areas and power up so I can jump higher to get more orbs to then jump higher again. Like, I could do that forever. I could do that very basic like game mechanic. Like, let me go to the place, I'll shoot all the duders, I'll take over that little part of land, and then I'll get an agency boost. And then there you go. I get more orbs, and then, I got all the orbs and now I'm more powerful and I jump higher. Like, that was it for me. I was like, great, I'm going to do this for the next month and a half. And I totally did.
Did you sort of get that itch, when there was no Crackdown being talked about with, what was it? Saints Row 4?
So a little bit like it,
a little bit. Okay.
It wanted, like, whenever I was playing it and I was having a lot of fun, but then I was like, man, they need to bring out that new Crackdown. Like, it was enough.
Think of Crackdown.
Yes, it was enough of an appetizer. Okay. Like, I was like, oh, I remember I love doing this. You know what game did this great? Crackdown. Like, so, that's sort of like, so, I mean, but no knock on Saints Row 3 and 4, because those games are awesome. But it was one of those that I was like, you know, they got real close to perfecting it with Saints Row 3 and 4, but the game that did perfect it was Crackdown 1. Like, I don't know what it was about it, but, like, you could even level up your cars. You know, your car garage gets bigger, the agency tower. It was a fun deal. Me and my buddy Jensen, we would try our best to climb the agency tower well before we were able to. Like, we shouldn't have been able to.
At level one or something?
Yeah, exactly. So, right. Yes, it's like trying to get to the end of the game at level one. That's exactly right. And we were able to get more than halfway up, which was astronomical for not having all your jump and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Even whenever you have all of your stuff leveled up, it's harder to do to get to the top of the tower, because that tower is enormous. But we ended up getting there like well before we were supposed to. And that by itself, I was like, oh yeah, this is why this game's great. Because we were able to do this. We kind of broke the game and we could get to the top of the tower. So yeah, and you know, they showed the Xbox, regular Xbox backwards compatibility for the Xbox One, which excites me a little bit, especially now that I'm getting into collecting. Because because if you want to talk about a system you can get games freaking dirt cheap for, it's the original Xbox. Because ain't nobody want those games. Nobody. Yeah. You could go to a garage sale and they could have a freaking shoe case full of them. And they'll be like, I'll give you $5. Great, here you go. Take them off my hands. But now, you know, they said it's not going to be as big as the 360 backwards compatibility, which I want to say has 380-ish games backwards compatible. So, but I don't, original Xbox might not have that many games. I don't know. I mean, they probably do. It's probably close to like 600 or so. But give me Otogi. Give me because that game was rad. That game was, that game was like Bayonetta before Bayonetta. You know what I mean? Like, that was a crazy good Devil May Cry-esque action game. Give me that Shenmue 2 port.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Give me, you know what I'm saying? Like,
KOTOR?
Yeah, give me, I'll buy KOTOR. I got it digital, but I'll buy a physical. You better believe it. Yeah. Unreal Championship 2 was a great game. Yeah, I think it was called, like, the Leandre Chronicles or the something. I can't remember the name of the place they go to, but yeah, that's a great game. Then there's also stuff like Mech Assault. Awesome game. Awesome game. So yeah, it's cool that they're doing it. It means they're listening to the fans. You know, it'll be fun to kind of collect. And, you know, now that I remember that it does 360 games, I might just go buy Crackdown 1, play that shit.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? Just getting back in it.
there you go.
But overall, I'm kind of with you. E3 felt kind of tame. But maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe it's good that this industry is kind of slowing its roll a little. And
as we're talking about it, it was making me think, we have, Tokyo Game Show, we have Gamescom. Each of the particular conferences had their own show separate from E3, you know, like, PlayStation Experience, where they just throw everything at you, what they're going to do. Xbox kind of does their same thing at their own time. So they don't need to rely on E3 to throw everything at us, which is, that's fine.
Sure.
In the hobby that we do, video games, getting every single game that we want to like get into or like, you know, have an interest, that it costs a lot of money.
Oh God,
to
does.
Be able to keep be able to keep up for a say a backlog of this year, it costs too much money.
Yeah, much just money just this you know? Year.
Yeah,
we're not even talking 2 or 3 years back.
Exactly. So like, for them to like space it out, like okay. Yeah, I can wait for an announcement when PlayStation Experience, they can talk about remake Final Fantasy VII at PlayStation Experience. It doesn't have to be at E3. That's fine.
Yeah, sure.
They don't have to talk about what else? What are the things that they were unveiling? They don't have to talk about Shenmue at E3. That's fine.
Yes, right.
I can wait.
Sure.
Because there's too much things to play.
I agree.
At the moment.
And they showed Kingdom Hearts 3. And I know
another trailer. Like,
yeah, another fucking trailer.
Hold on, guys.
Yeah. How long have we been doing? And the other thing is, I was like, I don't know what it is, and I'm gonna get the most amount of hate for this, but everyone knows how I feel about Kingdom Hearts, but it's like that to me felt like the most apathetic trailer I've seen in my entire life. For me, because it literally felt like they were in a room and they're like, guys, we got to show something.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, we have that one. We have that one place done. You want to show that? And they'll be like, yeah we could do that. And then they showed a little bit of, showed a little bit of the cutscenes and stuff like that. But the thing that turned me off about it, cause I saw the visuals and he's like skydiving into the level. And I was like, hey, they're showing up to play. That's good. And then it went on its 9-minute tirade of fucking darkness and
heartless.
You know what?
Damn it, son of a bitch. I should have thought of this when during E3 week. I should have done a reaction video of that.
Right.
I should have done that.
Oh, yeah, man.
Because, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys noticed, I've been doing reaction videos lately.
And they're awesome. I rewatch them at work tech. All the time. I watch them a lot. It's funny.
So, like, the things I care about. So, like, you know, Kingdom Hearts is like a running joke at this point. I should have done that. But, like, you know, you have to get it when the iron's hot. You can't just, I can talk about reviewing Wonder Woman now and people will watch it, you know, get thousands of views. No, you have to have the idea. No, this is YouTube advice. You have to have the idea right then and there while it's like trending.
Yes.
And then make the video on it. Like right then and there. So you can get all of the views before like before the big YouTuber that's already, you know, is a celebrity, you know, gets all the views because they also have the interest of that same thing. So like it's like, you gotta get it while the iron's hot.
Absolutely.
So, damn, I should have made a reaction video on Kingdom Hearts like saying the same shit. Like, how long has it been Square Enix?
Yeah.
You've been watching the damn trailer for like 10 years or so.
I would have just moaned the entire, like, my reaction video would just be loud sighs for, I just look and be like, ugh, just like exasperated, like, fuck. Oh, man. Because
truly swell concept art that we're seeing here.
And what's kind of funny, and, you know, I'm probably going to be wrong about this because Kingdom Hearts is going to make $18 quadrillion.
Sure.
But the thing is, I feel like, and kind of the same way with Final Fantasy VII Remake. Mm-hmm. You can't get away with that shit anymore. Like, you can't get away with, well, we're going to be working on this game for 12 years, and we're gonna have the best soundtrack because it's licensed by Paramore. And I'm like, this is not, what are you doing? Like, come on. Because here's the thing. Indie games are coming out at a super fast clip.
Mm-hmm.
They all do one thing super well. You have games that are coming out that are like being like Dark Souls clones. You got, I mean, the gaming landscape has changed even over the past 5 years. It's the attitude, the way people buy games has changed. The type of games
the Souls games have been a genre now.
It's its own genre.
It's not just demons and Dark Souls. It's, you have Neo, and then I believe you have Let It Die.
Yeah,
and
you
games that are like Souls games. Now it's a genre.
Lords of the Fallen, and
Lords of the Fallen.
It's its own game mechanic style, and I want to say stuff like freaking Kingdom Hearts 3 is from like a bygone era. It feels dated, right? If that idea of this big pompous, like, who's other than people, but it's funny because someone actually brought up this fact and I thought about it and I was like, you know what, they might be onto something. Who does Nintendo make Pokemon games for?
Target audience, the kids.
So the kids, but I think they're still targeting us. Like, you know what I'm saying? I think your key Pokemon fan are the kids of your and my age that were in freaking middle school when Pokemon Red and Blue took over the universe.
Because
that's it. And those are the people that buy Pokemon games. Because you ask kids that are like 6 or 7, unless their parents introduce them to it, they don't know what the fuck Pokemon is. They don't know. You know, so who is Kingdom Hearts for? Because you telling me Sammy that just got his first video game console is going to buy Kingdom Hearts 3 and understand a lick of what the fuck is going on.
Right, exactly.
Nope. Like, this is this is made for people that have been invested since, like, what? The 2000,
young adult.
Yeah, 2003, 4, whenever the first one came out. Like,
we're still waiting to finish the damn story.
Yeah, and then what is the story?
Different parts of the, you know, the games that they brought out in different systems. And
oh, remember 352 divided by 9 days?
Yeah.
Oh, such a just a classic for the ages. What the fuck does that mean? Like, dream drop death. What was
birth by sleep?
Oh fuck! Like what are these names? Like I really love a game on 3DS called Legend of Legacy. If that's not the stupidest name, but it's better. But that name is better. Then that name is way better than these Kingdom Hearts games because they don't mean anything. The title is gibberish, and you expect me to care. I don't know. I get exasperated with it. And like, hey, God bless. Yeah, if you like what you like, you know, if you love Kingdom Hearts, God bless, and, you know, have fun, and I can't wait for Kingdom Hearts 3 to come out, and then you can do whatever and, like, get a big body pillow. I don't know. So you can, whatever you want to do. But that it's insane. It's from an outsider's perspective looking in, and we've done the power hour that we did about Kingdom Hearts.
Oh yeah.
While I was playing it, I was like, what is this?
And you barely heard the beginning, but yeah.
Oh, people were so angry too. I recommend anybody listening to this, go watch the Kingdom Hearts power hour because it was,
oh geez.
Everyone was so excited that we were playing it. And then we started playing it and giving our commentary, and they're like, "Oh, well, maybe it's an acquired taste." And like, I feel kind of bad because I didn't mean
They're like, "Come on, Wes, you got to progress further and further to get into it." I'm like, dude,
it's like I've been playing for two fucking hours. Man. When does this start?
This is only an hour, so we only get to an hour of gameplay. So,
and I was like, I'm still on the tutorial island. Oh my god. Oh, but it was so funny because like people were so helpful though. Like God bless all those people.
Because
they were super helpful. Oh, go over here and try that and try the foot race and all this stuff. I was like, all right.
And then we'll fight Titus.
Oh blitz ball.
Steffi and walk at the same time.
Oh Jesus.
Oh man.
It's just insane to me. It's insanity. But like, and that's why I fell off the Final Fantasy games too. Because Final Fantasy 13, I love to knock the shit out of that game. It's one of my favorite pastimes because I can't explain it. I can't. I read through that. I came close to beating it one time before. I tried. I put a big college try in there, and it just didn't happen because you have to read the freaking appendices to understand what's happening, and then everything is named the same thing. That's a Square Enix problem, man.
And the nuances are named differently too.
Oh my god, because this actually started affecting Final Fantasy 15, and that's when I started not playing it anymore. Is because they started going on about this gibberish about I can't even remember what it was called. Yeah, I was like, what happened to the four bros hanging out and they have to like figure out like, I'm actually a good person, but I have demons inside. Like, give me that. Give me the hokey, we're friends and friendship gets us through whatever. Like, give me that. Don't make it a big, well, King Regal of the second court of mercenaries has summoned you to, and I'm like, oh, here we go. I
appreciate the fact that in E3 that they were showcasing a trailer saying that they're going to keep supporting the 15 universe with, you know, different stuff, DLC and mobile games and.
Oh, I'm all stuff. In. I'm all in for that.
VR fishing.
I was about to say VR fishing, and the trailer had like crazy butt rock. Amazing, like heavy metal in the background. I was like, dude, I'll play that forever. Like, give me that exact soundtrack while I'm fishing in VR, like some crazy heavy metal, and I'm set. Like, that will be my favorite part of Final Fantasy 15 is fishing. Because that kind of was whenever I was playing through it to review it for the Game of the Year stuff. I spent hours fishing because I was like, this is fun. Yeah, I'll fish and collect stuff and get into high school.
Do the episodes of the particular characters catch your interest at all? You kind of want to go through their episodes or not so much?
Well, maybe, because I mean, it depends on what it is. If they're trying to tie each of these characters into the big grandiose story, I don't really want a part of it, but if it was like Brotherhood. Remember how we talked about that? The anime series. Oh, that's outstanding. Like, because all it is character development. It's just talking about them as a person and like, why does what's his face like to cook? And why is Gladio the big buff guy with, you know, a chip on his shoulder? Like, why, you know, why is his best friend? I can't see. It's been so long since I played. Yeah. I can't remember their names. But, you know, Chipper Duder that has the blonde hair that's like, oh, he's such a rascal.
Oh, Prompto?
Yeah, Prompto. So why is he such a rascal? Ha ha. Like, Brotherhood sets that out so well. And to me, it's the best, like, just genuine character story stuff that Square's ever done. And I mentioned that on my blog during the Game of the Year stuff and the honorable mentions. It didn't get onto my Game of the Year list, but I was like, the strength of these characters can't be understated because they're well-written. They have a lot going on. They're very personal. The game did the characters a disservice, you know?
Okay.
And then I think it's reverse for Kingdom Hearts. So the game is a blast to play. Like, the controls are good. The jumping is fun. But then the characters start talking shit. And I'm like, where am I right now? Like, what is this? It's kind of bizarre like that. But it's funny that Square goes one side or the other. I love Vagrant Story, that PS1 game. The characters are pretty cool. The game is very hard to grasp. Like, it's difficult. It doesn't hold your hand, but the strength of the characters in the world make up for that.
Yeah.
So Square's always been really, Square's been really good about that. About if one thing's kind of suffering, usually the other stuff picks up the slack.
Yeah.
So on that regard, who knows? Kingdom Hearts 3 might kick ass. Like, genuinely. I know I hated on it for 20 minutes, but it is what it is. And there's a huge fan base. But then on the flip side, the type of game that I never got the hype for, but now I totally want to play the new one, is God of War.
Yeah. I don't think it's so much of a retelling of the first game. It's just, I think it's like a different game.
Yes. They actually gave the game a story. Can you believe it? Because beforehand, it was angry Kratos is defied by the gods. Yeah. He needs to go and he's going to kill the gods because he's mad. And that was it. And then they started trying to do some stuff in like God of War 2 and 3 to where, I killed my son. I feel so bad because I killed my son. And then you play through the thing and
you're like, wow, this is such a dick.
You're like, why am I supposed to feel bad for this guy? Because he's like walking away from his kid and his kid's like, dad, please don't go. Like, you might get hurt. And he's like, shut up, boy. I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, what? But
it's God of War Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, right. It's like Gran Torino, get off my yard. But like that, but that's what it was. And I was like, so you want me to feel empathy for this for this douchebag? Like, no. I don't feel like a badass. I don't feel empowered. Like, I was a dick to my family, and now you're trying to play sad music, and then Kratos like looks out in the sunset like, well, what if I didn't kill my family? And you're like, this is terrible. But now this new one, it's like, hey, there's subtlety here. And he's talking about, you know, that kid's like, why don't you believe me? Is it because I'm not as strong as you? And I'm like, well, maybe Kratos has to understand that it's not fucking about, you know, just killing shit.
So do you know exactly where this story takes place?
No.
In the games?
Well,
or is it like a completely new, different? This is not Kratos in Greek mythology. This seems like another guy named Kratos and like different mythology.
It seems like Kratos in Greek mythology, but it looks like you know that storyline where Thor was no longer like a god of thunder. He was like a guy, but he still had the lineage. But he just did. He had to make do without you know, oh, I can fly around and I have this hammer, and, you know, he just had to kind of live. That seems to me what this is. Like, Kratos almost retired as the big, I'm going to conquer, you know, Hades, and, you know, go and, like, try to kill Poseidon and, like, all this stuff. Yeah. Now he's just a guy, and he's trying to live off the land, and he doesn't want any part of that life, from what I gather. Now, I could be wrong.
So from your understanding, this seems to be post God of War 3.
I would think so.
And did you finish God of War 3?
I did not. But I do want to say that that's why I think the Kratos and the little boy thing is going to work really well, because this could be the roundabout story of him making peace with himself and, like, having the family. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's way more interesting to me than I'm going to play as this douchebag that killed his family. The fact that he now has to make amends for all that shitty stuff that he did in the past, you know what I'm saying? Like, so the fact that he had to do that, that he has to kind of live with his consequences, and maybe he tried to get out of that life, but now something's pulling him back in. That's a dynamic, and there's something to that, and that you can really sink your teeth into. And I think that's going to be what draws me in. Like, okay, let's play this awesome looking action game that also deals with something, that says something, instead of what a badass is Kratos, and oh, he's real sorry, he killed everyone. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, no, that's not going to work.
Yeah, exactly.
So you say, if I beat God of War 3, is there something at the end of God of War 3 that would...
I don't know. I'm not sure, because I did not beat God of War 3. I've still yet to go through it. But I want to say they completely finished Kratos' story. I'll just say it at that.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Oh,
so
okay.
I'm not sure. The reason why I'm asking, like, is this the same Kratos, or this is a new guy named Kratos, or because that's what I'm trying to figure out. Where is this taking place? Gotcha. Or is this a retelling of one, or, like, you know,
which,
like,
that would be, that would be awesome, because if they're taking the story more seriously and they're grounding it more in reality, as far as, like, the human emotion side of it, I could see that same exact story arc working really well. Yeah. But since the first, like, three games were so freaking outrageous, like, hyper violent, you're ripping dudes in half, you got your blades.
It was action porn, man.
Yeah, it was action porn. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. There's blood everywhere. And then you want me to feel sad because I killed people? Like, get out of here. Right. What are you doing?
But here, God and stuff. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah, you give me all this power, and then you're like, tisk, tisk, for ripping off the Triton's head. And you're like, what the fuck? You made me do it. Like, so,
exactly. Nah, bro.
Yeah, come on, bro. Thought we were good.
But
yeah, that's what I don't get, is why set up all this awesome stuff and then punish the player for doing it? So with this, it's more the other end. It's more Kratos has to do the type of life he didn't really want to do, and he has to, like, help his family, and that's more interesting.
Yeah.
But overall, I think E3 was solid. Not a really, you know, ooh, wow, my jaw dropped, everything's amazing type of stuff.
We're still talking about it now, and like, it came and went, and, like, okay, there's something to talk about. So, that's fine, too.
One of my biggest highlights of the show kind of has nothing to do with E3. It was just announced at the same time, is the .hack GU games coming to coming to freaking Steam. I was stoked.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
I was like, holy shit, this is going to save me about $300. Because those games on eBay are freaking nuts right now.
Yeah.
Maybe now they're going to be easier to collect. Because it's going to get a Steam release, but so that'll be fun. But I love those games, and .hack GU was actually my favorite trilogy out of the .hack games, because you had, like, .hack Quarantine and all these other ones that were the first four, but then you had the .hack GU, which dealt with another character, goes into
new
the world.
Right?
Yeah, it was a new character, but then you actually end up fighting Kite, the kind of main guy from the first one.
First character.
So cool stuff. I really like that weird hybrid, not really an MMO, but it's set up to be like an MMO.
The Sword Art Online.
Yes.
Like, trope.
Did it better, in my opinion.
But Hack did it first.
Hack did it first. Yes, it did.
I did it first.
And yeah. And there's even a there's a great dot hack. Are they called? What are they called? OVAs, kind of standalone.
Yeah.
Like mini series type things. There's one called Outbreak or Outburst or something. It's like on Blu-ray. I highly recommend it. It's only 4 episodes and it's awesome. I love that show. Like, I actually, now that I reminded myself of it, I need to order it. Because I watched it and I loved every minute of it. It was like 20-minute episodes, so you can get through the whole thing in an hour. And it does everything I love about Dot Hack. So it gets you into the world. It makes what the rules are. You meet these characters. They have some big fights. They actually level up armor. They do that stuff. They craft their own stuff. So, like, it feels like an MMO anime. It really does.
Yeah,
and they do it super well. And yeah, they say one story, they go, they get in, they get out, they tell what they need to in an hour and you're done. It just makes you want more of it. One shot, you're done. If you never watched another Dot Hack anything, that's fine. Like, cause they have a full Dot Hack sign, which I have on DVD somewhere, is really slow. It's really boring. I love it, but I would not recommend people watch it because it's like, there are entire 35-minute episodes of just like still shots of characters and voiceover and like exposition, and you're like, oh, okay, let's go. but that just whole going into a VR world and not being able to get out is just really interesting. So yeah, that was my biggest, well, like, besides Dragon Ball FighterZ, is Dot Hack GU coming to Steam. Like, stoked! Yay! That's awesome. So, but yeah, that's it. Yeah, I think that might be the episode.
Cool.
We just kind of wanted to check in with you guys.
We'll catch and, up. Yeah.
Yeah. Catch up a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hope you guys enjoyed.
Yeah. And we'll see.
You're going to have to wait another week.
You're going to have to wait 2 more weeks, there, peoples. But no, we got some video stuff coming to you. Marco actually posted up a video today, intro to mobile games.
Me being sick as a dog trying to go through that, trying to make that video.
Oh no, I need to
see it. You'll hear me with my stuffy nose and like words that don't have a D, has a D at the end.
Oh, right. Because your mouth just wants to shut.
I want to breathe and I need to talk and it's that sort of thing. And it's a 20-minute video. I'm like, ah, man. Anyways, yeah. So I that had that video up. I had that video up and then I'll make some videos and are in process of making some videos before I leave for my trip. But if not, I'm going to use this time just to relax and rest.
There you go,
man. I can get ready to be active again on the channel and training again. So
there you go. Yeah.
So this might be a sign of just to chill and just relax
for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. And you've got to enjoy yourself next week. And and I'll be holding down the fort. I have one video up on YouTube already. It just hasn't been published. So I'll probably put that up this weekend. I'm going to film an unboxing video as soon as we get done with this. Then I have a third video that I have the footage for. I just need to edit it and put it together. Then I have a new West versus Backlog. And then I have a new West versus Backlog Retro. So
this guy's busy over here.
there's 5 videos. One of them, I might give away what one of them is. It's a Kami log. It's the one that's already uploaded. So people were asking, you know what? You should really go on that full YouTube level and do like top 5 lists.
Oh shit! There you go.
So
there you go.
So that I even cut it closer. I did a top. I did a top 3 list. And what it is, the top 3 Japanese role-playing games on the PlayStation 1. I went through a lot of them. This kind of works as an unboxing video, or like, I guess, a pickups video, plus a narration video. It reminds me, now that it's all edited and it's up, and like I still need to publish it, so it might be in the next few days. But it reminded me an old school fans, and like, so you're one of them. You're gonna understand it. Nitro Beard episode number 9. It was Brian Belita and myself. Tyler Alou was sick that week, and we spent 2.5 hours talking about Japanese role-playing games.
Oh, dude, that was my favorite episode.
So that was this
my favorite, hands down.
This is like kind of a spiritual successor for a few reasons. So the movie, the video is only like 13 minutes long. So we get in, we get out, we talk about three games. We show some good close-ups. We show some good, you know, manuals and discs and all that good stuff, and talk about memories and all that stuff. But it has some special stuff in there too. So once that video hits, go in, and then I know it's going to be a lot of hate mail because of the three that I picked. Because to me, they're the top three. They're like the perfect trifecta. Because there might be better RPGs, like genuinely, and I'll say that right up front. I say it up front in the video. There might be better games on the system. There might be better RPGs on the system. But for my money's worth, these are the three games that define that system for me. Like, totally. So yeah, it's going to be a start of something. We'll start doing more top videos, but we'll see how this one goes first. But this is the one that I had to do because I now own all of three of these games in physical disc form. So I had to show it off. I had to be like, yep, I got them. These three. So yeah, man, that'll be up. And then, yeah, I got the four other videos coming. So yeah, we'll have a ton of stuff for you guys over the next few weeks. I will be moving into a new place.
Yeah.
So the cool thing about that is we're going to have our own dedicated game room and office where we're going to do all of our recording. So the backgrounds are going to look different. I mean, we're going to have, the production's going to pick up a little bit. We're going to have a swank digs that we can really make stuff look cool and film in front of things. And it'll be fun. So big changes coming. So everyone take the next few weeks, rest yourselves, get some good sleep, get some good food, all that good stuff. We're going to have a ton of video content coming your way. But of course, you can hit up Marco on Twitter at twitter.com/MarcoPolo177. Sir. You can also go to, is it facebook.com/nerdinthebay?
Yes, it is.
Is that right? Go on that Facebook, baby. Yeah. And then you can hit,
news.
That's right. And then you can hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com/comedyhobo. And also, of course, at facebook.com/comedyhobo. That's good. Yeah, that's going to be where a lot of the behind the scenes stuff is posted. So we may even do a CommiLog tour of the new house once we get the game room set up. Show everyone the new digs. That'll be fun. But yeah, that's our time. So Marco, get well, my friend.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much, brother.
Yeah, of course. It's always a pleasure. But until next time, guys, we are outies. It's been Brothering Around episode 30. We'll see you next time. Peace.